Hello, hello. Welcome to Track and Yield, a winner's guide to safety and sustainability key performance indicators. My name is Evan Meffert. I'm an engineer at Firestone Walker Brewing. I recently joined the sustainability subcommittee, so I'm doing literally the least I can do. Before we get started, please turn your cell phones off, or at least turn the ringer off. And then we'll be taking questions during the seminar via Slido. So use the QR code that just went away. Hold on. Uh-oh. There it is. Hopefully it stays up this time. use this QR code. How do I make it not advance? Just sit on that. It's like on, I think it's on slideshow mode or something. The Russians are doing it all. Anyways, once we get it up, use that QR code as a link to room hashtag showing on the presentation screen, and you'll be able to do the Q&A through that QR code. And then lastly, once the seminar is over, submit feedback via a survey, which you can access through the CBC 2022 app. It's just going to stay like that now. Okay. All right, so just brief introduction of our speakers. We got Matt Gasiok. He's a sustainability ambassador for the Brewers Association. He's going to be talking to us about sustainability. And then Matt Stinchfield is the safety ambassador for the BA. So please welcome them up to the stage.
Let's see if we can get this rolling. Pressing about every button that is up here. Left mouse. No dice. Well, we said we wanted this QR code, and you are getting this QR code. For those who weren't fast enough, I could get us kicked off here anyway. It was mostly going to be a title slide to kick us off. So as Evan said, I am Matt Gasiok, Sustainability Ambassador for the Brewers Association. And we're here to talk today about performance management indicators. Here, I feel like I'm in the way. I'm going to go like this. Myself, sustainability ambassador, I've been for a couple years, started my career in sustainability in a couple different craft breweries across the country, and have been supporting in this role of putting together resources and educational seminars and sessions around sustainability for a few years now. Matt Stinchfield is literally writing the book on safety in breweries, so make sure you ask some good questions, and you might get a footnote in his book. There's actually a chapter on performance indicators, so we're creating the content in real time. Okay, I'm gonna keep going. Slides were superfluous anyway. We're here to talk about performance indicators. This was going to be where I give you an agenda slide, and so I'm going to talk through the agenda instead. We'll sometimes use the abbreviation SASU, S-A-S-U, as shorthand for safety and sustainability. And want to let you know why we're presenting together. Besides having the same wardrobe, obviously, safety and sustainability actually have a lot of overlap in... Oh, something's happening virtually. hands off. I love it. So have a lot of overlap as it pertains to the craft brewery. So safety and sustainability are frequently not the reason that a brewery starts, but are programs and initiatives that as you get underway, you realize how important they are. There are also areas that don't frequently have an in-house expert the way that you do in your brew house or even, you know, running a tap room. So we try to provide resources accordingly. So today's presentation is to dive into a concept that is both high impact and low cost. If anyone has sat there and enjoyed one of our presentations in the past, you'll know there are some expensive ways to address your safety and sustainability. This is not meant to be that. There is a huge amount of impact that can be made just by approaching performance indicators. This is a presentation meant for all breweries of all sizes. So whether you're just getting started or going or a brewery in planning, to you know, a large regional brewery, we feel like the indicators and the management of data is really important along the way. And then one more bullet point that I'm going to tell you about when we get slides again. Kind of the way this presentation is going to roll is I'm going to start off by talking about the what, why, and how of sustainability indicators and safety indicators. We'll talk about a couple different kinds of indicators. Then I'll pass over the mic. Oh, my goodness, it's really happening. Woo! Well, quick applause to the AV folks. I forgot to mention, as you could see, this is now entering the 12th hour of our 13-hour presentation. So thank you all for surviving this long. Get out. Okay. And these are our photos from when we were competing in the 1954 games. Agenda. Haha, the bullet that I forgot, and a very important one. As Evan mentioned at the start, we are taking questions via Slido, so please do engage in that way, and also Q&A at the end. We'll note there will be prizes for anyone who asks a question, so make sure to get involved that way. And here's the rest of the agenda for the visual learners in the crowd. Okay, so what are indicators? We're talking about performance managing indicators, and these are essentially the way that you're reflecting how your stated goals and objectives are being achieved. Because goals and objectives are good, but unless you have some way to understand your performance towards them, then they just become this ethereal concept that doesn't really have much, doesn't hold much water. So indicators can be qualitative or quantitative. I know that a lot of times we think of metrics as being primarily or entirely quantitative, but there are a lot of qualitative options as well, and you'll hear a lot from that and Matt on the safety section, as well as on the sustainability, that some of the qualitative indicators can be really important. So you have the idea of leading versus lagging indicators. Leading are indicators that are before something happens, so your process itself, whereas a lagging indicator is sort of outcome and performance based. And then these could be both inward or outward, so you know, tracking against you internally or tracking against others via benchmarking, something like that. Okay, so why should we use indicators? In one word, science. For the indicator nerds in the group, just like us, feel free to download the PDF at the end, follow these and read these additional studies. But the gist of it is that there is proven connections between performance and having effective metric systems and indicators across industries, across types of organizations and departments. Again, these are low to no cost. We would tend to say low cost rather than no cost because time is money, and it does take some intentionality to have someone set some strategic targets and the time it takes to collect data and the time it takes to analyze that data. But we feel like the output is well worth that minimal investment. And again, it's much less costly than something that you're going to a bank for a loan for. Some of the co-benefits, workforce motivation. So your workforce is likely already motivated by making the best product in the world. But if your company has other targets related to safety and sustainability, it might be tougher to motivate them towards those goals without being able to track over time and see progress and find that connection to that purpose. Efficiency improvement. So for the low cost that it takes to implement these programs, you might see a return immediately on efficiency. A lot of times you'd be surprised at how quickly understanding how your performance is doing can immediately impact that performance. So the big picture, you know, you're in the business of making beer, and your company also plays a place in the social and natural world. And so understanding this performance can kind of put a big picture perspective on your operations. And that is tied to corporate image. We're not suggesting greenwashing or saying any untruths about your safety program. But when you're doing these programs well, it can be part of your brand and part of the way that your company is perceived in the community. Okay, so the how of indicators. The first bullet point I'm going to highlight here because if you have a certain piece of equipment or a machine, you're not necessarily building out indicators on that. Right, you are expecting a machine to act the way it's meant to act, and you have to do your maintenance and all of that. But what we're really talking about here with indicators is around the variability of human behavior. So the best indicators are connected to human performance, and so that's what we're going to focus on throughout this presentation. For sustainability, tracking resource usage is a big piece of it. Assessing progress towards your goals. Again, you know, not just to engage your workforce and motivate your workforce, but to give you that path for achieving those objectives. Helping to improve your decision making. So if you know that safety is something that you want to address, using a number of indicators can be really helpful in prioritizing which initiatives and projects to implement first, and also how to build your strategy for the future. So types of indicators, what we're gonna focus on today is key performance indicators, or KPIs. And the reason for this is that these are really used to understand performance as a baseline. In the order of operations, we suggest building out your KPIs to track and analyze your data before getting into longer term or higher level goals, because that'll help inform those goals. Something else that's really important about KPIs and can be really impactful is the fact that we suggest using them for teams. So engaging your teams, whether it's your seller team or your taproom team, to help develop these indicators themselves. Then they have a part in it, are more engaged, and the performance is tracked according to them and kind of has that ownership. One thing I'll say before I touch briefly on the other things that I forgot at the start was take all this with a grain of salt. You can use KPIs at your company level. You can use SMART goals on the team level. These are just kind of best practices, but you're going to do what works best for your company. So with that disclaimer, I'll mention that OKRs, or objectives and key results, tend to be focused on the goal, following what you find with your KPIs, created by managers typically, and then the SMART goal model, which is specific, measurable, attainable, realistic, and time-bound. That tends to be the highest level goals as well, and also informed by KPIs. So with that, I'm going to hand over to Matt about indicator selection.
Thanks, Matt. Great stuff. Okay, before we get too far, let's just have working definitions of sustainability and safety that we can go from. This is a great definition for sustainability that paints how broad of definition we're really interested in setting. It meets the needs of the present without compromising the ability of future generations to meet their own needs. So oftentimes when we think about sustainability, we're really focusing on resource consumption. This paints a definition that includes that, certainly, but broader. And our favorite safety definition, which I summarize by saying safety is freedom from harm. Safety is freedom from a series of conditions that cause bad outcomes, where somebody's injured, becomes ill at work, has a fatality, we damage product or process equipment, or we damage the environment. So safety is freedom from bad things happening, and sustainability is the freedom from using up the things that we need. So there, that's, in a sense, how close together safety and sustainability really are. So we're talking now about how to choose indicators that are meaningful for you. And the first thing I'll do is I'll borrow this expression from another industry, where in environmental monitoring we talk about data quality objectives. The idea is to look forward into the future to the point at which you're asking a question. How did we do? How bad is it? How good is it? How much did we use? Any sort of future question that you might ask. And then the data quality objectives part of it is, number one, what data do we need to have to support the asking and answering of those questions? So if it was, how much did we spend, then the data would be some financial data over a span of time. And then we look a little bit more at that data and say, how often do we need it? How accurate do we need it? You know, can we get a cheap, flexible number that's pretty close, or do we have to have a highly precise number? Usually precision costs money. So, we want to try to balance the resources that we're spending on our initiative. And we can use these types of decisions in anything that we're doing, whether it's decisions made about safety or sustainability, or just other business decisions that could have to do with your human resources or anything else. We want to make sure that the inputs that we put into the process, number one, we collect what we need to answer the questions we're going to ask in the future. Two, we don't collect data that's superfluous, that doesn't relate to the questions that we're going to ask in the future. Because, as Matt said, time is money. We want to ask just the right questions, collect just the right data to support the decisions that we're going to be making. And, that those data points have credibility. They have an ancestry. We know where they came from. We know how we got them. They're defensible, to the extent that we need them defensible. Legally defensible is one thing. Day-to-day operations defensible about making a common decision, that's a different level of responsibility. And by durable, what we mean is that the data that we collect, we're going to be able to continue to collect over a span of time, because we don't want our measurement system to change in the middle of a period of time in which we're using indicators. So before we talk about what makes a good indicator, let's talk about some of the things that make poor indicators, and these are very common pitfalls here. The first one having to do with how much data do we collect. The human nature being what it is, if it's easy data to collect, we collect lots of it, and we might collect data that we don't even need, but we've got reams of it because it's easy. Think about if you're drawing data from your accounting records, how much data is in there. With all these different expenses coded to different accounts. You may not need all of that, and it may just make your analysis much more complicated than it needs to be. Obviously, there's the contrary possibility where you're not collecting enough data to work out the averages of things that change over time, right? If the data is very noisy, you'll need more data points to understand what the true trends are. Complexity is can be a pitfall in terms of specifying data that we need for our inputs that are very difficult to get. And difficult could mean an expensive piece of monitoring or measuring equipment that measures a process. It could be complex in terms of it's a raw number that we have to take through several transitions to become a number that we can relate to other numbers. I'm trying to intentionally keep this vague so that you understand that complexity is a problem rather than give you a specific example. Where you can keep it as simple as possible, like although a thermometer is an indicator, it's not a key performance indicator, but with a thermometer, it's very simple. I look at the temperature on the readout, and I already know what I need to know. I'm too hot, I'm too cold, I'm at the right temperature. Boom. You know, it's almost implicitly simple. Another problem people run into is what we call the bubble. And this is going to tie us into the culture of your company. And I and others have said, you know, safety culture, sustainability culture, DEI culture, your overall culture of your company, they're all the same thing. Culture is the thing that tells us how we behave. And when we're talking about, say, safety, safe actions are the way we behave. Unsafe actions are also behaviors. They're unsafe behaviors. What tells us to behave the way we do is our beliefs and our values and our assumptions, in other words, the way we feel. And that is what we call culture. And culture isn't something you can hold in your hand. It's a collection of these feelings that the group has. And that's what advises us in how we behave. And what underlies that is the experiences that we've had, the experiences that other people have had and that we've obtained vicariously through training or through coffee room chats or what have you, or watching YouTube, and socialization, how we interact with other people. So these are the fundamentals. If we want to change behavior, if we want to conserve a resource, here's a simple behavioral thing. There's the recycling bin, there's the trash bin side by side, right? Do you take that one extra second that it takes to differentiate what you're holding in your hand and decide which container it goes into? That's behavioral. If we try to alter the behavior by putting a sign there that says you'll be fired if you put recycling in the non-recyclable, that's probably not going to have very much impact, except like further expound on the disconnect that you have in communication in your company. So we want to get to what is the root of that behavior to differentiate those two containers. And that is a belief system, right? That's a value. I value resources. I know that they are not unlimited. I know that it takes, you know, energy resources to create packaging materials. I don't know what your particular belief is, but if you're one of those people that decides, yes, this goes in that one because that's going to have the best outcome, there are some beliefs and there's understandings, there are assumptions, there are perceptions of the world around you that made you do that. And that's what we can change. We can change that on the cultural level, but putting a sign there to change the behavioral level doesn't. Years ago, I was in a brewery, and on the restroom mirror, there was a sign that said, "You are looking at the person who makes yourself safe." Now, is that just behavior? It targets behavior, but no, it's instilling a belief. And when you instill that belief, and like, that's a hard belief to argue with too, see? That's like, you know, Matt was telling me earlier about, you know, bet on, if you think you're right and somebody else is wrong, put a bet on it, you know, and create a value system over that, and you'll find out people can change their minds if they're about to lose money. So this is what we want in the bubbles. We want to make sure that we've got adequate input from the people who know the processes and who are going to benefit or lose by the decisions that are made. We want to understand that data is valuable, so let's collect relevant data. And quite often, we don't track zero data. An example in safety would be the tracking of your annual accidents and injuries, the OSHA 300 forms, right? And you go all year and you didn't have any lost time injuries and you're like, rock on, you know? We don't even probably need to fill this out. Actually, you do need to fill it out, but it's easy to understand if you think you don't need to fill it out. But you should fill it out because that's a great data point in your data set. 2021 was zero, 2022 was zero, 2023 we had four. Oh, now that stands out because we had all those zeros that came before it, see? And so that's what a key indicator can do for us. Quite often the boardroom level is only thinking about how much is this going to cost or how much is this going to save and not looking at the human factors of it. You know, what is a happy workforce worth in dollars? I don't have the answer for that one, but it's worth something. It's probably worth a lot. And so, getting in on this one-track mind of just that, or it's just how much stuff we put in the recycling, we're not really being discretionary about how we recycle and how we sort in the waste stream. You know, that would be one-track minded. Let's just get all the stuff recycled. So as we've both been talking about, really what we're talking about in key performance indicators is, on some level, how well are we doing what we need to be doing as human beings? How are we behaving? Are we behaving safely? Are we using resources responsibly and sustainably? And consequently, particularly in safety, there's a lot of subjectivity to the KPIs that we assign, and you'll see a lot of them are not very numerical. They're more qualitative than they are quantitative, and that's okay. You know, this is a KPI, and so is that. And if every 6 months I put in my notebook this or that, I have a track record and I can look at it and I go, you know what, we've got more thumbs up in these last 3 years than we used to. So that's going in the direction we wanted it to go. I want to just call out this last line here that, you know, we're going to use both leading and lagging indicators, and we're going to give you specific examples in both of our disciplines here momentarily. We like to use leading indicators whenever possible because they look to the future. They don't document what already happened. But sometimes there's a lot of value in what already happened. And think about this, it's a little bit of a mind screw, but if we collect a bunch of forward-looking data for a long period of time and then we look back at all the forward-looking data we collected, isn't it lagging indicator? I don't know. Think about that one over a beer tonight. So in order to kind of visualize this, we've got these graphics we'll show you. Let's imagine you've got a packaging line for your product, and that in the process of packaging your product, you create some waste, right? Mangled containers, the cardboard liners that come from your pallets of packaging material, wrappers, not the beer waste necessarily, but let's look at packaging waste. And that right now you just collect all that stuff up and you put it in a dumpster and it goes to a landfill. Well, you can measure things about that. You can create any kind, in this case, these are going to be quantitative. You could say, how many pounds of waste do we produce for every barrel of product that we barrel, that we package? How much does that cost at the landfill? How many pounds of it end up in the landfill per barrel of beer? See, that's just like a rate. We created this rate to express it. You can make up whatever one you want. Depends on what it is that you're trying to measure. Now, in and of itself, this is a setup with indicators. If I track this data over a period of time, every month, every quarter, every year, whatever my interval is, I start collecting this, and I've got the same values, the same units I'm collecting each time, I can look back at it and say, oh, guess what? Our production went up by 100% last year, and our waste production went up by 80%. So somewhere in there, we're looking at lagging indicators, right? But we can say, oh, on a per-barrel basis, we're producing a little less waste than we used to. Maybe that's just an efficiency because of the scale of the operation, or maybe we're getting better at what we do, but we might be able to identify that from this. We might also look at this and go, do we have to send all that stuff to the landfill? And we might go ahead and create a new process. We'll keep these numbers for later, but we imagine a new process whereby we're side-streaming all the possible waste materials that we have reasonable recycling opportunities for, And maybe the Mylar that we don't have a recycling opportunity for, we find somebody who's good with a sewing machine and they turn them into shopping bags for our tap room. And so, you know, that's another form of recycling or reuse. And some of these metrics can be the same. We can still look at how many pounds per barrel of waste we produced that had to go to a landfill, how much now went through recycling, how much did the recycling cost us, how much did the landfill cost us now, how much did the landfill cost us in the past, and we can get numbers that say, overall, we've saved money, overall, we've reduced our environmental footprint, overall, we've, you know, we're sending a good message to our customers by giving them recycled shopping bags made out of our packaging materials. So we can tick a lot of boxes this way, and if we think thoughtfully about how to measure this, we can come up with a lot of the same units, and we can compare apples to apples. So you can use KPIs for a single existing process. You can look at a future process, a comparative or a substituting process. Now, I'm going to talk just a little bit about some common safety indicators so you can think about those. But before we do that, because I don't want to bias you, I'm going to go into a Slido poll, and I'm going to ask you, in terms of your company's safety program, at whatever state it is or it isn't, what KPIs do you think would be most useful for supporting what outcome? So if you go to the polls tab on your Slido page right now, you can make your selections. Here we come. There are a lot of choices to read through, I understand. Good, keep them coming. Well, the midfield's definitely playing catch up here, but we have a clear leader in this race, and that would be increasing safety involvement of all employees. I applaud you for choosing that one, because this one pays off on a lot of different dimensions, right? It even answers some of the other ones if we can get that increased involvement. One of the culture quotes I like is, you can't call it culture if everybody's not in it. So, you know, when we talk about inclusivity and culture, it's even bigger than a DEI type of inclusivity. It is everybody and has a seat at the table, as Dr. J would say, but if you have a seat at the table, you also have to have a voice in the conversation. And so that kind of involvement is going to be necessary, right? Because behaviors come from culture. Culture is people and socialization. If you don't have people involved, you don't have a fully developed culture. So we've got about 50 answers here, and it's clear that half of you think increasing safety involvement of employees is very important. Increasing the reliability of documentation, 16%. I agree with you. There are a lot of documents that we still have yet to write, sure. Tracking accident and injury rates, we'll come back to that one on the next slide. Measuring the cost of safety, great stuff, really good. And the real answer is you probably want to track several of these things, not just one. So here's my little table on some safety indicator ideas. On the qualitative side, we've got, you know, quite a few opportunities. In other words, not hard numbers. For OSHA citations, you might say, you know, we didn't have one, we didn't have one, we did have one, we didn't have one, we didn't have one. Or if you have one and then you start having more after that, that's a very important trend because it means you're not resolving what OSHA saw in the early visits. But you'll see I put here use with caution because it's only a lagging indicator. OSHA's requirements are only the minimum requirement, and your chance of getting an OSHA inspection is very, very, very low unless you have a serious injury or fatality at your business. Sometimes disgruntled employees can trigger an OSHA inspection, but it's hard to get the inspection, so the value of citations is questionable, like dirty data, we'd say. But missing training deadlines is easy to get because you have a spreadsheet, either you know, whoever's head of your safety committee or your HR person has a spreadsheet, and they go, yeah, you know, we've got these people needed their forklift, and it's expired. It was good for 3 years, and they've already expired, but we know it. It's easy to know. It's easy to fix, right? And we can get that one out of the lagging indicator column pretty quickly. On the leading side, preventative maintenance schedules are great because they save a lot of downtime, they save increased injury rates, and they save losses to your process equipment. Near-miss reports sound at first like they might be lagging. Okay, a near-miss report, in case you don't know, is let's say we're operating a forklift in the warehouse, and the forklift mast is way up, and some empty kegs that are on that pallet fall down to the ground, 15 feet to the ground. Nobody was hit by any of the kegs, and the operator was safely in the cage. We'd call that a near miss, right? You understand there's a very serious injury possibility that we dodged there because somebody didn't happen to be right there. So yes, that happened in the past, but the resolution of it is all in the future, because we get to say, what do we do about this problem now? We got lucky because nobody was hurt. And maybe the answer is we always strap dirty kegs, and you can do it in a sustainable manner. You can use some scrap webbing that came on some product packaging that you got and turn that into straps for holding the kegs on the pallet. I'm not going to go through all of these, but I do want to point out a negative quantitative one here that is quite commonly used as a KPI in safety, total recordable injury rates. And the reason it's negative is because it's often associated with an incentive, right? Think of that sign that says, we've had 300 days without an injury in the workplace. That's creating a false KPI, really. You're saying, keep that number, you know, well, if it's how many days we've gone without an injury, keep that number growing. In other words, if you have one, don't tell anybody. We don't want to know, right? Or every time I see somebody injured in the brewing industry and a GoFundMe page comes up, I'm thinking, where's their workers' comp? Why don't they have workers' comp? Did they not report this to their insurance company? Are they so scared of what's going to happen to their premiums because they were running unsafely that they think the community should fund their poor business decision for this individual who was hurt? That's what goes through my mind. You know, that's why I'm the safety ambassador, because I think of things like that. But honestly, you have to be honest with KPIs, and if you create a false reward system, that's not being honest. But mostly, I want to point out these quantitative ones that are super cheap and easy on the right-hand lower part here. We can use them to measure monetary value. How much have we put into our safety program? How much have we, you know, spent on training? How much have we spent on personal protective equipment? And we can normalize that and use a numerical system for it. We can look at things like, we wanted to have a safety meeting quarterly. How did we do this year? Did we have four? We had five. Rock on. Okay. Brownie point. What are we going to do next year? Let's go for eight. And then you it's leading. You put that out there in front of you. See, that's very easy, and the measurement is very easy. You have records of your training. Oh, and guess what this does? It drives you to keep records of your training because that is your data point. And safety record keeping is a huge problem for all of us. So the KPIs actually incite you to do better record keeping. All right, good stuff there. Let me give you an example, a visual example. We're going to use this sort of thing in the rest of the talk. Let me say, I'm going to use the wellness, worker wellness as an example here, loosely in the Department of Safety. Let's say those of us in the middle of the picture are wondering, our workforce is getting heavy set and they're aging, and our accident and injury rate is climbing. Do you think they're related? They could be. They might not. But in either case, we don't like what's going on here, but we don't know what it is that's going on. We need to try to measure it somehow. And we can measure this, and we can find out that, yes, you know, on a per pound per employee basis, we have such and such an injury rate or lost time number of days or something like that. But in reality, what we really want to do is say we want to find a way to test this. We know that the injury rate is real. That's a lagging indicator that's climbing, so we don't like that. So we say, let's think of some ideas. Let's say we put in an exercise room in the brewery with an exercise machine and a scale, and this is one you can incentivize. This is one you can give prizes and rewards for, right? Because you're rewarding good things, not reporting data. And then you can measure, you know, what change of fitness occurred. Oh, you know what? As people participated in our exercise room, their fitness improved. We bring in a dietitian to give us free consultation for our employees. Or we have a brew pub that, you know, we end up feeding our brewery staff post-shift. They go to the brew pub kitchen and they get their supper. And you look at your menu and you go, you know what? Those French fries are good, but everything here is fried. And these guys eat it 5 days a week. Maybe we ought to have some options on our menu that are healthier for those who eat on this menu regularly. See? And then you can say, hey, you know, our workers became happier because they had better food choices. You know, they still could get French fries. Can't take away the French fries. But they had better food choices, so they became happier. We could say, you know, hey, every quarter we're going to get together, those who want to, optional. We're going to go for a hike together. And company will pick up the picnic and the park fees and whatever it is, and join us if you will. See, and that this is cultural stuff, right? All of this, you're building culture. And once you build that culture, you start getting the rewards in behavior. So with that, I'm going to turn it back over to Matt for sustainability. Thank you.
Fantastic. So on the sustainability front, we're also going to start with some a couple quick Slido questions. So pull out those phones again. So the question is, what are you already tracking at your brewery as it relates to sustainability? All right, it's coming in here, and it, yeah, feel free to check as many boxes as are accurate in your case. And what I'm seeing here is that water is the most tracked among this group, electricity close behind, CO2, and then natural gas, and then we have even some with all of the above. So, really nice. Hopefully you're using your utility bills for this, and it's not too hard to do that. So the next question is, what are you primarily doing with this data? Is this informing your business strategy? Is this tracking against certain goals that you have? Is it for prioritizing? Or nothing quite yet? And this is why you're all here. Thank you. Nothing quite yet, and that's great. That's why we're going to dive in and spend a couple minutes here talking about some of the indicators that you could be using as well. Okay, so as I mentioned, utilities. This is really where a lot of sustainability indicators start. And although it's lagging, I've highly recommend the use of normalized utility usage. This is for your electricity, natural gas, water, CO2, solid waste. I'm going to make a shameless plug here. There will be a QR code shortly, and there is a benchmarking tool that we at the BA have put out that helps keep all of this in one tidy place and is actually helpful for the outward sign. I mentioned inward being looking at yourself, outward being looking at the industry. There's some interesting ways to do that that I'll discuss momentarily. But then with regard to utilities, there are also some leading indicators. One that's highly recommended is one point of contact, whether that's someone from your brew staff, someone, you know, from your accounting team, whoever it is, it's much more likely that you'll actually be able to continue a indicator and goal-setting programs effectively if you have one person who's owning it. And then for those who have a staff that's large enough and interest that's wide enough, regular green team analysis meetings are also really valuable. I'm going to pop up here. This is actually some of the data that we've collected from that benchmarking tool that I was referencing. The way to read this is that Lighter bars are the median among breweries of a certain size and their performance. The darker bars are best in class. It might be small for the folks in the back, but of the four pairs that are there, the left is breweries producing less than 1,000 barrels per year. Then 1 to 10,000, 10 to 100,000, and then over 100,000 barrels. A couple interesting takeaways from this. One is that economies of scale frequently help. So larger breweries tend to use less on a normalized level. But then you can take a peek at CO2 and see that that's not always the case. Something else, a couple other notes, is that one, if you're brewing less than 1,000 barrels per year, don't be too hard on yourself if you're not, you know, hitting industry best, right? Because that is kind of tracking, and that's why we break it down by size so that you can understand your peer groups. But I also want to challenge you that if you look at best in class in the less than 1,000 barrels produced, it's tracking with all of the bigger breweries as well. So if you are able to really devote the time and effort, there can be some really impressive outcomes. Next, I will talk about some of other kinds of indicators. Direct environmental, so greenhouse gas emissions. We measure this in carbon dioxide equivalents, CO2e. And scope one being direct, what you are emitting from your facility. Scope two, indirect, this is like where you're getting your electricity and your power from. And then scope three is your supply chain. Obviously the toughest to measure, but also really important if you're trying to understand the total footprint of your product. Next, wastewater. Fortunately or unfortunately, your local municipality is probably giving you a lot of these, a lot of this data already, but can be really, really important to understand what's going down the drain. Then on the leading side, I encourage you to look at supply chain miles. So cutting down, trying to minimize this as a way to cut down on the emissions associated with transporting along your supply chain, but also making sure that there aren't any negative environmental externalities that are going to another community rather than yours. It helps with efficient purchasing. And then CO2 recapture. Lagging on cost indicators. Utility fees, the thing I'll mention here is that I encourage you to look at it normalized and actual. It's important to understand your normalized performance, but you're paying actual money as well. So think about indicators that work with the actual dollars amount that you're not trying to go over. And then on leading, investment and reinvestment in sustainability projects. And the one I'll say use caution with is contributions to environmental partners. I know that a lot of companies see this as a good opportunity to have a positive environmental impact. But what I'll say is you want to be careful not to be contributing to organizations that you're mostly paying for admin fees, or that this is kind of greenwashing rather than actually doing the work and making the impact. Now, in the interest of time, I'm going to kind of burn through this water use example, similar to what Matt was doing on the employee wellness program. But if you see your water use increasing, you see the dollars flying out the door associated with it, more going down the drain than you would like. Some of the things you can do, so you can start sub-metering and really understand what the performance is on each of your processes. Build in KPIs around leak detection and equipment maintenance to make sure that you're getting ahead of it, ideally as a leading indicator. And then also a certain number of behavioral trainings over X period of time so that you can make sure you cut down on some of the variability in water use by different employees doing the same cleaning process, or you know, whatever, however they're using the water, and the with the expectation that you'll cut down on water use and increase the money in your proverbial wallet. Okay, so we're going to wrap up here by giving you the QR code that I promised. I encourage you, everyone, to check this out. This will take you directly to the resource hub at brewersassociation.org. On there, there's tons of information for safety, sustainability, and a couple other domains as well. Presentations, guidance, manuals, the benchmarking tool that I mentioned, where we got all of that data, and where you could kind of pack in your utility usage is all right there. Videos, there's a ton of amazing safety videos that are built right in to the resources page for you. There's the forum and more. And while we try to provide as many resources as we can, we understand that we're definitely not the only game in town, so definitely use trade groups, industry groups that you see on the screen here. They're all linked for when you get the PDF version of this presentation, but they have a ton of other great resources as well for you. Then on the government side, a couple other really great ones. I'll highlight just a few here. The DESIRE, the Database of State Incentives for Renewables and Efficiency, give you some really good opportunities to find money for some of your sustainability projects. And then OSHA has an abundance and of information for you to help improve on the safety side. Okay, so I'm going to summarize. We started a little rocky, but we found our footing once we got some technology help. We gave a sense of the what, why, and how of indicators, different types of indicators, how to select them. We ran through a couple in each of our respective domains, landed on resources. And so I want to encourage, you know, definitely engage on Slido. We'll have some time for Q&A. But also, Matt and I each have booth hours, I guess, at the BA booth, which is downstairs in the hub. So, you know, definitely come and find us to talk about your specific brewery challenges you're up against as well. We're there. Please help us so that we're not just staring at a wall, and come say hi. The other thing I'll mention is that we today at 4:15, there are safety and sustainability subcommittee meetups. You might see that on the program. Those are open to anyone who wants to come and meet up with those subcommittees. So a really cool opportunity if you want to meet some of your peers who are leading the charge on both safety and sustainability as members of the BA subcommittees. So check those out as well. Say thank you. Feel free to scribble down the longest email addresses in the history of mankind. Yeah, 45 characters or something. It's too many, but we make it work. So come, feel free to reach out at any point. And with that, we will open it up to Q&A. Perfect. So I think these...
Why don't you read it, Matt?
Okay.
I'll just do this and you stay there.
Beautiful. Okay. So the first question that has the most upvotes, are KPIs themselves a good tool to influence culture? For example, I know this is being measured, so I'm going to change my behavior. Can you measure that? You want to take that one, Matt?
Yep, sure. That's a great question because it gets at the heart of the behavioral modification that's necessary to make these improvements. So yes, the answer is yes and yes. So yes, you can use it as a motivation tool. I find the old saying, you attract more bees with honey than vinegar. And so, you know, giving positive reward for desired behavior is a good way to go. You can, depending on what it is that you're measuring, figure out how to count it. You know, is it a matter of meetings? Is it a matter of near misses submitted? Is it a matter of maintenance requests fulfilled? Any sort of thing like that, and then you can begin counting and look at it over time. That's a great question.
Great. It says anonymous. If anyone wants to own up to that for your prize, anyone?
There we are.
All right. Oh, I'm really excited you said that because I wanted to do this for like months. It made it like halfway, so I'm feeling good about that.
That was a good one. They don't go that far usually.
All right. So Steph says, who do you include in your sustainability initiatives? For example, do you have a committee? Is it a revolving committee? This is a great question and is going to vary vary brewery to brewery. But we find that sustainability committees are most effective when it comes with a diverse group of folks. So if you have someone in your tap room who studied environmental science, who can meet up with an engineer who's always focused on efficiency, who meets up with someone who's seeing the numbers in your accounting team, that's where real impact can happen and where there's more kind of like ownership across. In terms of a revolving committee, I have heard it work both ways. A lot of green teams at small businesses there's just not enough people to keep a revolving door, and so you kind of have your champions. But then, also, I would say if you don't have a set, you're on the sustainability committee this year. If you don't have like terms, feel free to definitely make sure you keep the door open for more folks that want to come in, because the more voices, the better. Where's Steph at? Oh, man, no chance.
Okay. Nice. Yes.
Next year we'll have T-shirt cannons. All right, anonymous.
We need a cannon.
What are the starting steps for one person with other responsibilities to establish a safety sustainability program from the ground up? You want to take
that? I'll take that one, Matt. So one of the problems with the way we do safety and sustainability now, let's say the current paradigm, is that we subjugate the responsibility to a subset of our workforce, and therefore the other 90% that aren't involved in that, we are relying on that 10% to supply them with the answers and the information they need. And they may be the brewer, not the chief communicator in your business, so that often falls flat. Thinking of culture as the group of the entire body of people, that's what you want to do. So my answer is this. If you are that motivated individual to get things started, understand that your first order of business is to gain involvement from other people. And normally in the safety side of things, a small business will start a safety committee or a safety team, and it will have a representative from different aspects. So somebody from warehousing or all facilities stuff, somebody from the brew house, somebody from front of house, somebody from ownership or the admin office, and that those people get together on a reliable schedule of meetings that don't get kicked back for, stuff happens all the time in a business, but certain things really need to happen as you've programmed them to stick to it. Once you get that involvement, then you can start identifying the low-lying fruit and say, let's get a few things that we get comfortable with, that we understand how the KPI process works. Let's get those instituted, and then let's expand in the direction that we need to go. So my famous proverb I'm always quoting is the fish rots from the head. You need management support. You can't have the Lone Ranger somewhere buried down halfway in the company and have the effective change that you need. You need management support. You can start with that nuclear person who around whom that group forms, but you've got to have representation of all employees, and you've got to have the management support.
Great. Rather than me making a fool of myself, anyone who asks a question after the presentation, come here and we'll get you a headband.
That was a good one. Come get your head.
Yeah. Teresa asks, can you point us towards data that shows that improved safety and sustainability improves a company's bottom line? I'll say on the sustainability side, I'm happy. This is a great point to interject that we're going to be filling out answers to all of these questions that will be available to everyone afterwards. And so we'll make sure that we include links and things like that. But you know, I'll certainly say on the sustainability side, we've seen people that have detected leaks of some sort, or have used a sustainability program of just tracking, and have found, you know, tens of thousands of dollars of savings per year with a couple smaller, you know, investments. So there's definitely money there, and I'm sure.
Yep.
Matt,
on the safety side, OSHA has an e-tool where you can put in any type of injury, your estimated profit margin, and you know, say put in a burn injury, and the size of your business and your profit margin, and it will tell you, based on historical data that OSHA's collected, how much that injury is going to cost you. So monetizing safety has always been a tricky business, but a good tool to estimate all the costs associated with a worker injury like that is that e-tool. I can't remember the exact website, but it's on OSHA.gov, and it's their injury estimating e-tool. It's very helpful. It's a good tool if you're talking to ownership to say, you know, these are the real kinds of costs to expect if somebody falls off a ladder and breaks their ankle, for example.
Is this on? Yes. Sweet. I can add to that a little bit. I started my career actually as a sustainability coordinator, and one of my first jobs was to get all the energy bills in order. And when I started looking at the energy bills, I actually found a mischaracterization of a tax that we were overpaying on, and we got refunded about $90,000 for back pay on taxes in like the first year. So, yes, there's a business case.
Yeah, awesome. Thanks, Evan. And I see with that we're actually over time, so we'll give ourselves the hook off stage. But thank you so much for joining. Really great to chat with you all today. Anyone who wants a headband, come on up and we'll get you that. But thank you.